From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, government secrets. Here's what's happening. The Federal Aviation Administration has said that online shopping powerhouse Amazon may not employ drones to deliver packages, at least not anytime soon. Well, the FAA has maintained since at least 2007 that the commercial operation of drones is illegal. And a federal judge ruled in March, however, that the FAA enacted the regulations illegally because it, well, simply did not take public input before adopting the rules, which they say is a violation of federal law. Flight regulators, though, appealed the decision, maintaining that the commercial applications are still barred. So they're going to fight that, and it looks like no Amazon delivering drones to your home. Pesticides are causing significant damage to a wide range of beneficial species and are a key factor in the decline of bees, as scientists are now saying, as we have been reporting for years. Researchers who have carried out a four-year review of this literature say the evidence of damage is now conclusive. The scientists say the threat to nature is the same as once posed by the notorious chemical DDT. Manufacturers, though, say the pesticides are not harming the bees or other species. Of course they would say that. Iraqi officials insisting now that they're holding on to a key oil refinery while making gains elsewhere against militant fighters. The Deputy Prime Minister for Energy Affairs has denied reports that the militants had taken over the oil refinery, saying that security forces are still fighting militants at the site. Still not good news there. Records of dead veterans were changed or physically altered, some even in recent weeks, to hide how many people died while waiting for care at the Phoenix VA hospital. Danyon Brinkley, author of Saved by the Light, and also heads up the Twilight Brigade, which helps so many other people and troops. Danyon, this is deplorable.
Oh, it'll get worse, George. I mean, it's going to keep getting worse. I mean, we have 1,000 hospitals and veteran centers, and we can't get them in there. And this is my 30th year as a hospice volunteer, and here's what's going to happen. The more people feel comfortable about telling the story, the more middle management and upper management are going to find themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
And the major issue, George, is going to be dealing with the federal unions. You can't, if you have 3 years, you can't fire you. And then it just becomes about bonuses and getting that extra money. I mean, the people who work in the VA, and I know an awful lot of them after 30 years, they're great people. But the systems that's used and the federal labor unions, they just keep shifting people around, gets lackadaisical, and our boys are suffering. Our men and women are suffering.
Danyon, why don't they just drop all the VA hospital facilities, the doctors, everyone, and simply tell, you know, VA members, soldiers coming back from war, go to a private hospital, we'll reimburse them, we'll take care of the cost, and you know, go for the best medical treatment.
Well, if it's 51 miles or more, they can do that. But you have to take a good look at this, George. You are watching affordable health care at play. The VA is the socialized medicine they've already paid.
That's right.
And what will happen is, once we get affordable health care in place, these same type of unions, these same type of issues, if you live 51 miles or more, you can go anywhere. If you're within 50 miles, you have to come. But what you're going to watch is the people who bring this up, these are the people that's, once you eliminate the VA and you mold it into the Canadian model of the British health care system, then you have completely succeeded in creating nationalized health care with the same type of outcomes.
All right, Danyon, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to you. Australian authorities say they're not certain when a new search area for the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 will be announced, clarifying earlier statements suggesting that it would be made public Wednesday. Not going to happen. Smartphones reflect the personal microbial world of their owners, according to scientists. More than 80% of the common bacteria that make up our personal bacterial fingerprints end up on the screens, according to a new study. Personal possessions such as phones might be useful for tracking, they say, the spread of bacteria. Just thought you'd want to know about that story. iPhone screens are about to get a lot bigger. Suppliers in China are about to start work, apparently, on two new iPhones, according to an article from Bloomberg. The phones will have display screens that are 4.7 inches and 5.5 inches across, a major leap from the 4-inch displays on the iPhone 5S and 5C. A Florida man has died when he fell into an industrial-sized wood chipper as he was removing debris on a South Florida road. Witnesses saw a fellow worker looking distraught, running from the machine, apparently trying to get help for the man. The stunned worker who witnessed the incident simply collapsed against a fence in shock. As we reported yesterday, three friends had been taken to a hospital after reportedly becoming possessed by evil spirits while playing with a Ouija board. A 22-year-old girl was playing with the game with her brother and their 18-year-old cousin in the village in southwest Mexico. Minutes into it, she apparently started growling and thrashing around in a trance-like state. Meanwhile, the other two reportedly started showing signs of possession, including feelings of blindness, deafness, and hallucinations. We talked a little bit about that last night. Karen Dahlman, of course, the author of The Spirits of Ouija. Karen, I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to say about this story.
Well, first of all, it's definitely sensationalism. And there's really two accounts. And thank goodness Robert Murch, our favorite historian of the Ouija board, did some great research today and dug up the true account. So the first account, you captured it quite well. I mean, their symptoms were the hallucination, trance-like state, feeling numbness. It almost sounds like, you know, they were taking some kind of uppers. And so they gave them basically downers, relaxants, painkillers, anti-stress medication. We would know those as benzodiazepines, Valium, Xanax, Dibrium, something like that, to slow down their central nervous system. Interesting enough, though, with that first account, let's say that was true. It's really such an erroneous mistake to make to say that was due to possession. We really need to get beyond the sensationalism of it and ask them questions. And, George, those questions weren't asked. And the questions really we need to look at, what was the psychological state of being before this incident happened of those kids? And did they have any mental health issues? And how long did their symptoms last? Was there a toxicology report?
Well, and could they have been Karen, could they have been acting?
And you know what? And now that second account gets into that. They definitely could have been. I think there's a big part of that. I mean, were they imbibing on various substances? You know, for all we know, they could have been playing tiddlywinks and dropping acid and getting the same results. So the second account now is the one that Robert Murch pulled up. And it's so important for him to really find the truth behind the Ouija stories. So there's a Mexican online newspaper called Puebla Online. And the story goes like this. It's really two brothers and a male cousin, same ages that we heard earlier, and that their family supposedly said these boys were in a trance after playing Ouija board several days earlier, and that they were going to perform their own exorcism on that. And their exorcism consisted of yelling at them, hitting them, and neighbors across the street reported this. And finally, the kids were rescued, and that's the word they used in the article. They were rescued from this home, and they looked at their medical cards and learned that the youth all had histories of, back to the first question we should have been asking, what do they exhibit? You know, what was their medical history before? They all had sensory disturbances, such as numbness, blindness. They've had that before, hallucinations. They've all experienced muscle disorders before, like paralysis and coordination. And they also had convulsions, seizures, et cetera. So what looks like possession, I mean, you know, we look to jump to conclusions because it's so much fun and it's a great spooky story. Really, the medical report says, these symptoms closely reflect a major psychological stress or trauma, and that they were not self-produced. So there's the answer to your question. They said they were not self-produced or faked. And the real story, this is the real account that happened. And basically, overall, you've got to make a conclusion here. And the conclusion is, we got to quit blaming superstition or a board game because there's like a wonderful pop culture aura of evil that surrounds the infamous Ouija. And really look at the medical history, what's going on here, the symptoms they exhibit, their history of the symptoms, and a medical diagnosis. And after all, if you have people that are undergoing great fanatical extreme stress, such as yelling, hitting, beating, mm-hmm. you will cause psychological disorders, such as what we talked about, what those kids exhibited. And it's not unlike prisoners of war that undergo a threat to the person, or anybody that goes through an accident and undergoes a serious threat to themselves, it results in post-traumatic stress disorder. Those symptoms are very conclusive of PTSD.
Karen Dahlman, author of The Spirits of Ouija. Now, listen to this story out of Gibson County, Tennessee. A Gibson County three-year-old who nearly died after trying to rescue a cat from her family pool talks about the experience and says she saw Jesus. Johnny and Christy Kimbrough, they say they had gotten home from work when their afternoon was turned upside down. They were doing things around the house when they found their three-year-old daughter, Ella, floating in the family swimming pool. Christy says she immediately ran and pulled her daughter out of the pool. She says her daughter was lifeless, cold, blue. And after Johnny performed CPR, the little girl began to breathe. Gibson County first responders were called and administered oxygen until the ambulance came. Ella was airlifted to a children's hospital in Memphis, where she was put on a ventilator. When Ella woke up, she told her family that her cat fell in the pool and that she jumped in the water to get it. Ella remembers seeing a light and then seeing a man. Her mom said that that's the moment that Johnny got her back by performing CPR. Christy's sister showed Ella a picture of Jesus, and she said that was the man she saw. The little girl said the man was with her when she nearly drowned. Amazing. And you know, every year, millions of people around the world are diagnosed with cancer. Each one of them dreams of a victory in the battle against it. But can cancer ever be completely defeated? Well, researchers at a university in Germany have now reached a sobering conclusion. They say cancer is as old as multicellular life on Earth and will probably never be completely eradicated. Or will it? Up next, Ann and Whitley Strieber joins us. Their new work, Miraculous Journey, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. For the next couple hours, Whitley Strieber will be with me, and we'll go as long as we can with Ann Strieber. You will understand why in just a moment. Of course, Whitley, best known as one of the greatest authors out there. His works include Critical Mass, Communion, The Coming Global Superstorm that he wrote with Art, The Grays, 2012, The War for Souls, The Omega Point, Solving the Communion Enigma as well, hosts his own radio podcast called Dreamland. You remember that name as well. Ann Strieber, of course, is a novelist, managing editor of UnknownCountry.com. That's their website. And she hosts a radio program called Mysterious Powers. They have written a new book called Miraculous Journey. And we're going to have Ann tell us why that book is called that. Ann, welcome to Coast, first of all.
Thanks a lot.
And let me say hi to Whitley. Whitley, hello there.
Hey there. It's good to be back.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Ann, let's talk with you for a little moment, and you go with us as long as you think you can, okay?
Sure. I feel wide awake. You know, what's interesting about the reason we called it Miraculous Journey, which you can get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble online, all kinds of ways. But it's about the near-death experience I had. And you can say to yourself, well, near-death experience, product of imagination, who knows? And what happened was I discovered that I have terminal cancer of the brain.
Oh, my.
And I don't know how I got it. I have no idea. But I do know that my first operation, I had a near-death experience. And it was wonderful because it taught me so much. What it taught me was my dead Siamese cat came to me. And I could feel his fur.
Yeah.
I put my face in his fur. I could feel it. And He was very arrogant. You know, Siamese cats are always very arrogant. And he looked over his shoulder at me and said, come on, let's go, come on. And so I thought, well, okay, let's go. And he...
Yeah, take your time.
Oh, he kind of kicked his legs backwards, and he said, you stupid humans, you can't even find the world of the dead on your own. Isn't that wonderful?
I love that. Now, how did you find out, Ann, that you had this brain tumor? What happened?
How did I find out? Oh, I know. I had a grand mal seizure.
And Whitley, jump in any time.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I woke up in the middle of the night because there was Annie was moving, and I could see that she was having a seizure. And I know a lot since in 2004. I was on Coast to Coast AM one night and had a brain hemorrhage and collapsed right there.
Oh,
and she survived by just miraculously. And then I saw this seizure taking place last February, and a year ago, February now. And I thought to myself, what could this be? So we went to the emergency room, and they took an MRI of her, and they found a very angry tumor in there. We were in surgery within a few days, and it's a pretty, really serious tumor. It's a thing called a glioblastoma. It has elements of something called gliosarcoma in it, which is a very rare and extremely lethal tumor. And at the time she was diagnosed, the doctors were not hopeful that she would even have a year. But it's been over a year, and you can hear her talking now.
Oh, yeah.
She's coherent and fine. We have a lot of fun. She's got a lot of energy. I've been taking her to quite a number of movies she hasn't liked lately, but that's far from the course. The point is this: there's a lot. You know, we don't know how long this will last, George. We have no way of
knowing. No, you just got to do the best you can and
but,
run away.
You know, I want to get back though to Anne's near-death experience. The most beautiful part of it was simple, but it was so useful. She found herself.
Well, do you want to know what the world of the dead looks like?
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead and tell.
Is it dark, Anne, or is it enlightened?
Well, not really. What this looks like was it looked like a train station or a bus station. It was a weird kind of submarine lighting. And, you know, those awful white bricks on the walls. And I said to myself, what's going on here? And I saw people carrying huge packages and huge overflowing suitcases. And I knew what they were doing was they were waiting to get on that train or that bus and go, well, where?
Wherever, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you think once you got on that bus and went, that's it, you're dead?
You have to put the packages down.
I think so. But the first, you have to put the packages down, which means, I interpreted it to mean that it meant I had to forgive people I needed to forgive. And we all have people we need to forgive. I thought to myself, I need to forgive my stepmother, who basically treated me like Cinderella. I have to forgive my father, who brought my stepmother into our lives after my mother killed herself when I was 7.
Oh, geez.
And I thought, well, I'll forgive them. That's what we're supposed to do, and I will forgive them. But they gave back. I found that my dad always saved the same parking space for us at the hospital.
A lot of weird stuff started to happen. Her dad You know, George, I'll be frank with you, but I've lived all of my life with ghosts in my life, and since I met Annie, it's gotten even more intense.
Let's talk about that, Whitley. We're at the break. Whitley Strieber with us, Ann Strieber, miraculous journey, her fight with a horrible brain tumor. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, Whitley and Ann Strieber with us. Ann and Whitley, so you're in this near-death experience bus terminal. People are carrying their packages.
Well, I want to tell you the biggest miracle of all, which is why we call this book Miracles.
Miraculous Journey.
Yeah. Miraculous Journey, yeah. Yeah, it was made out of my diaries, and I can't remember the title.
Say it past Ann's bedtime. We have to admit this.
All right.
She's
all
not
right.
A coast.
She's not a late one.
She listens online.
That's right.
But I want to tell you the most incredible miracle that happened. All of a sudden, I heard this voice in my head, and it said, you must get in touch with, I won't say the name.
Sure you can, Amy.
Okay, well, you must get in touch with Amy. You must get in touch.
Now, who's Amy?
Our goddaughter.
Okay.
Our goddaughter said, we have to get in touch with Amy. So I emailed her mom, and I said, okay, what's Amy doing? And it turns out she was working in a restaurant and studying Buddhism and studying yoga.
Having a good life, actually.
And having a good time.
Absolutely.
Good time. So, but if I hadn't, seen Amy in a very long time, and if I hadn't gotten those messages, I probably wouldn't have seen her then. But what happened was, they wouldn't leave me alone. They kept chasing me around.
And then the next thing that happened was her mom got real sick and passed away.
Yes.
And suddenly Amy had Ann. Ann was there.
Just me. We're her surrogate parents now.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The thing is, it's...
Huh.
And Ann kept saying to me, there's this voice that's asking me to get in touch with Amy. You know, Amy, we've known Amy ever since she was a baby, of course, and we're friends, but not real close. But you know, Amy's got somebody to rely on now. She's got Ann, and she had her mom for a long time. Her mom died at the age of 50, and it's a very young age to
die.
Way too young. And so it's really been a good thing to have. For Amy to have Ann, and for Ann to have Amy. I mean, they've got a wonderful friendship. Now,
well, she calls me about twice a week.
Yeah, all because of that voice.
Well, you know, here, Whitley and Ann, I mean, it's been 10 years now, I guess, since you were diagnosed with a brain tumor.
No, it was 10 years ago. She had a brain hemorrhage. She had the tumor diagnosis a year ago.
Okay. Might she have had the tumor then, though?
She did. They just couldn't see it with microscopic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And as you both know, my sister's been battling almost the same thing.
Right, I know. And it's just,
oh, I didn't know that.
Ann didn't know, but I did, of course, George.
And so, you know, 10 years of fighting this and battling this, Ann, what did you do? What are you doing to stay alive? I mean, you're battling this. You're winning. What are you doing?
Well, I'm not doing any weird health food stuff.
Yeah, you are.
Going to
she just doesn't
regular
know it.
Doctors, okay.
She doesn't
no,
know
I'm
it.
Going to regular doctors.
Whitley, what are we giving her?
We're giving her a lot of stuff.
No. I mean that I had to make the choice whether to try alternate cures or to go to the doctor route. And since I live a short walk from the best hospital, well, I have best hospitals
in the world,
I decided I would go the doctor route.
She took the doctor route, and I took the alternate medicine route, and we're doing them both.
Well, there's nothing wrong with both.
No, there isn't. I think that Annie's survival for a year with the cancer, especially the gliosarcoma element, and there's also an element of melanoma, and it's a real nasty tumor. Survival, and not only survival, but coherent survival and having a reasonably good quality of life, I think it's due to things like the cannabis. because the standard medical, the standard treatments she's on are good. They're really good. They're very good. And they're being...
It's cutting edge, no doubt.
Oh, well, it isn't actually cutting edge. And here's why. There are clinical trials out there for all kinds of different things. But I don't see any glioblastoma, any brain tumor clinical trials that are really look like they're real winners. I mean, there are a lot that are promising. But I want to do things that I know work. And so we went with pretty much the standard treatment. And because the way it's being administered now is prolonging life significantly more than it was even 5 years ago. But we also went with alternative therapies, the leading one of which is cannabis. And Annie takes...
I don't have the kind that makes you high, but I do have a kind that gives you the munchies.
Okay, now, well, how do you ingest it? Do you eat it? Do you smoke it?
I'm not a smoker. Never been a smoker. I have a special diet, very strict diet. I don't have...
Except for the cookies.
Well, all right.
Laced.
There's a few cookies in there every once in a while. But we're careful. We're really careful on sugar because tumors of all kinds need a lot of glucose.
Yeah, they do.
So you want to keep the glucose level of the body low enough, as low as you safely can, which means you try to keep it below 100, and we do that. And
that's good.
The addition of metformin, which
that's a diabetic drug, right?
It's a diabetic. Annie's got she's got controlled type 2 diabetes, but I feel that all brain tumor patients in particular should be on metformin, and so does our diabetes doctor, because it has efficacy against this particular tumor, and they don't quite know why, but it does.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
Yeah, but the cannabis she takes...
But how does she take it?
She takes it as a tincture. It comes in a stoppered bottle,
okay.
And you drip a measured amount into a glass of juice or water, and she just drinks
it.
And this particular tincture is designed in such a way that it's not going to give you a high, but it is going to have a significant amount of efficacy. And it's probably the reason that the tumor has moved not at all in a year, not at all. I mean, there's no movement. I mean, we may find movement any day. I mean, this is cancer. You don't know. But right now, it's been a year that we didn't expect to have.
It's contained.
We did not expect to have a year. We expected to have about 6 months. So...
What about attitude? How important is that?
Attitude is always good around here.
Yeah.
This is a house of laughter. It always has been. It has to be. Ann lives here.
Oh, I also see a lot of ghosts. I've gotten used to seeing ghosts.
Well, now, finally, she's starting to see ghosts, too. I've seen them all my life.
But, yeah, so we are.
They're like that cat she mentioned, saying, oh, you stupid humans, you can't get into the world of the dead. When he died, he showed up, and... in our bedroom about a day later, all confused and didn't know where he was. And I grabbed him and picked him up and tossed him
towards the ceiling.
Tossed him toward the ceiling, which is best I could do. And so I think he was being a little bit disingenuous, complaining about Ann not being able to find her way. He couldn't either.
Sometimes when something happens to the brain, whether it's an injury or a thunderbolt,
yeah.
All of a sudden, you get these strange, mystical powers.
Absolutely.
Psychic abilities, everything. Do you think that's what's going on with you, Ann?
I do. And I know that the way mediums see the dead is they see them standing behind the person. And I don't see dead people. But I did see Co. And
you actually do see dead people in.
Oh,
see
I
your
see
your father
ghosts.
And ghosts. Yeah, I mean that qualifies in my mind.
Yeah, it's true.
You're not a medium, but you do. You can always tell when there's somebody around. Let me put it that way.
Well, that's true. The other day, I felt somebody got in bed with me, and it wasn't sexual. It was just somebody. curling up behind me.
Yeah, thankfully, since it was an elderly woman.
it's the hag syndrome. Stay away from that person.
No, it was not unpleasant. It was a really a lovely experience, as Anne described it.
Yes, and I didn't know this person was dead. The only thing I knew about him was he told me he was an actor. And so, and a few days later, I found myself at this person's funeral.
And oh, that's right. It was a man. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I didn't know he died.
No.
And I remember.
See, but those enhance your powers. They've got to.
But that's been, it's something that is new for Annie. It's been happening to me for many years.
What's this?
Where people show up just right after they've died.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was very interesting because you know how at funerals people stand up and say a little something about the deceased person. And someone got up and said, oh, he was so happy at the end of his life, he got to do some acting.
Yeah, and I said that's the explanation. She said he's not an actor. I said, and then we were there, and we realized he was an actor at the end of his life, and apparently he'd always wanted to be an actor all through his life.
Well, Whitley, the cannabis that Anne has been taking, in addition to everything else she's doing, why do you single that out?
Well, because of the fact that it goes into dopamine receptors on the brain, and brain tumors are full of dopamine receptors, and if they're blocked, the tumor can't in effect breathe. It can't circulate nutrients, and I think that's why the cannabis slows it down. I don't think it's a cure, although there are some cases.
It's more just living longer.
There are some cases where there's a type of oil, THC based oil, that has been implicated in cures. And I looked into that very carefully and even talked to some of the families that were involved. And the cures have been mostly related to a couple of them, to childhood cancers. Adult cancers, it has slowed it down but not really cured it in any cases I'm aware of, although there could be some out there. In Annie's case, we're not looking at a cure, but we are looking at it. So far, it's slowed it down.
Did you consider stem cells?
Well, I wish I could get hold of them.
We haven't. I know that's one of the alternatives.
I know City of Hope has been kicking that around.
Right, they're working on that as I think they've got some stem cells and also viral. Some immune enhancement and virus clinical trials. And there's a clinical trial involving injecting polio virus into the tumor, which kills the tumor but doesn't, because the tumor's not got your body's immunizations.
Because we've all had the sugar cube or the shot.
For polio. I mean, most of the people who don't have those vaccinations are few and far between. But that's being done at Duke University, and there are a number of promising clinical trials out there. But the thing is, I don't want any to get on a clinical trial until we're in a situation where that's basically what we have.
Your last hope, you mean?
Yeah. Well, once we're looking at recurrence. Our oncologist, who is he's one of the leading experts in terms of, he knows, he's involved in most of the working of the good clinical trials. He said, if I can find a trial that's likely to work for Anne, I sure will. And you know, they're all at UCLA. They're all everywhere. Okay. I mean, they're all at all the big hospitals. So
Cedars, UCLA.
UCLA, Sloan Kettering.
Mayo Clinic.
MD Anderson, Mayo Clinic, UC San Diego. There are a lot of locations where these trials are, Duke University, where these trials are taking place. And if there's one called the DC Vax trial, which is interesting. It's a vaccination. Basically, it's vaccinating your body against the tumor. And if when you need we have to. Yeah, when we have to.
And Ann, let me ask you this. Did you use a cell phone much?
No, I didn't.
Not
no,
at all, hardly at all.
You know, it seems like, I know Israel has a big problem with brain tumors because they don't have any landlines. I did that. I'm probably Ted Kennedy.
I suspect my sister might have had that.
Really?
The attorney, Johnny Cochran,
yes,
had a tumor on the left side of his head. And
yeah.
I don't know. I just suspect that it could be tied in.
I agree.
I
would think so, too. And they're not going to let you know that. I mean, they're not going to ever let us know that.
No. Thank God for text messaging, because I think that's a big, big savior.
And also there are, you know, for years, back in the old days on Dreamland, we used to sell a thing that was supposedly redirected the energy of the cell phone away from your head. And there's a something I have on my cell phone that I bought on Amazon called a Pong, which has got gold in it, which does the same thing. It tries to redirect the...
It's like an insulator.
Yeah, right. And I don't know if it works or not, but I do think that there's a lot of different things out there that cause this, potentially. I think we're in a very cancer-producing world, not just with brain cancer, but lots of different cancers. Our world invites cancer into our bodies. I think that low-level exposure to pesticides is probably a very big factor.
Maybe even drinking water.
They
put fluoride in it.
It's a poison for crime.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's an industrial chemical too. They don't even use pharmaceutical grade fluoride in our water. I mean, I find that appalling. So it's got impurities in it as well, and you can't. I've explored getting the fluoride out of the water, and it ain't easy. You have to basically use a distillation system in order to do that. It's very frustrating.
You'd spend all your time that you had left getting ready to eat or drink.
Dealing with your water. You're dealing with your water all the time.
Well, Ann, when they first told you you had a malignant brain tumor, how did you take it? I mean, was it something that just bowled you over, or do you face it and go,
I got the message from Co. And I thought, I better start forgiving people because this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, she knew it was coming. We both did.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming, and it did come. And she's, you know, I don't know. I can't answer for Ann, but we've both noticed that life is a fatal disease. Nobody makes it.
From the get-go.
Yeah, from the get-go. And so, you know, we're having a wonderful run, and we have such a wonderful love affair and so much fun. And
you got to live every day like it's the last one.
Right now.
Every day.
Right now. This is what counts.
Yeah.
We're here on coast with you, having a great time talking. That's right now. That's where we always are, right now.
Well, that's good. And Ann, you're still dabbling with unknowncountry.com?
Oh, yeah, except I now have somebody else writing the news, and she's really good.
Well, good. You're a good teacher. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Whitley Strieber, Ann Strieber here. Their websites, unknowncountry.com, alienhunterbook.com as well. And go to Whitley and Ann's website, unknowncountry.com, and you can fill out the information to listen to Whitley on Dreamland. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com, and make sure you download our free apps in the store for your iPhone and for your Android. We shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.